Blog Talk Radio.
My opening song. Here we go.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
All right. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Excuse that little hiccup there. Welcome to another edition of the Voice of Indie podcast.
That means is that what it
Wednesday
is?
Wednesday night. That means it's Wednesday night. And that means this is episode number 139. And we have a brand new guest that's never been on before. So we're excited to introduce her to everybody tonight. How you doing, Stephen?
Well, I'm doing great. I was driving around this afternoon in sunshine, 75 degrees, talking to my friend in Michigan who was complaining about snow.
No, we had snow, yeah. And then the thing with the music there, I hit that and I'm watching it. It's spinning. It's playing, but there's nothing coming out. Like, okay. Yeah, we had snow pretty much all day. And right now we've got sunshine, clear blue skies, sunshine, nothing on the ground, but, you know, old dead grass. But
cool.
Hey, we're close to spring. So we're happy about
that. All right. Well, we've got a great show for everybody today. I want to start out talking about Ethan Drew. Most of you have never heard of Ethan Drew. He's a 19-year-old actor who's got some very cool acting credits under his belt. And he is starring in a movie this summer with Corbin Blue, who many of you remember as he was a Disney kid back in the day. And he's a movie star now, got all kinds of fans. And Christopher Lloyd. Now, depending on what generation, my generation, he's Jim Ignatowski from Taxi. Reverend Jim. The next generation, he's Doc from the Back to the Future movies. The guy's out there. He's got like 150 movie credits and stuff, TV shows and whatnot.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, yeah. But at any rate, Ethan Drew, Corbin Blue, and Christopher Lloyd are starring in a movie coming out this summer called, I believe it's Camp Nowhere or something like that. And Ethan Drew, we hired him to do the voice on an audiobook. A young adult audiobook that we did for Ellie Collins. Now, many of you know Ellie Collins is our author who writes Greek mythology series. She wrote the first one at 11, second one at 12, and the third one at age 13. And these are chapter books. These are full chapter books, and her mother's a professional writer, so she's got somebody looking over her shoulder, making sure she's tight and stuff like that. These are excellent books. And for all of them, we hired voice actors to make audiobooks of them. And, you know, we put music and sound effects and stuff in there, but we hired Ethan Drew to do Mad Max and Sweet Sarah, which is the third book in that series. And we are really looking forward to being able to piggyback all the publicity Ethan's going to be doing for the movie this summer to talk about the fact that, hey, he's also done an audiobook. And he's putting this audiobook on his IMDb page and other places like that as well. Now, when we cut the deal with Ethan, we got a package deal to do two of them and paid him half up front for the second book as well. And now we're searching for the young adult audiobook that would benefit from a 19-year-old who can sound like a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old or whatever it is that you need for it, so that we can put out another audiobook in time to piggyback the publicity for this movie this summer. And we spent a couple of weeks researching this, looking at authors out there who are doing young adult books, and finally narrowed it down to the one that we were really impressed by. He's got a new book out. We checked it out, thought this would be perfect, and we sent him a proposal that would, you know, help him put that into an audiobook form with a famous movie star that can get lots of publicity this summer at an incredibly good cost in order to do all this. He never responded to us. So we're throwing it back open again. People out there, if you know the young adult book that would benefit from having that kind of a voiceover and being made into an audiobook, we're open to proposals because we've already got the movie star who can do it.
Yeah, and Ethan is good too. He does this for a living. And it was interesting about receiving his recordings as opposed to, say, you know, the recordings I got for the Willis Croft audiobook, where Trenton Bennett would give you the line, and that was good. Ethan would give it would read certain lines three or four different ways and give you the option to choose which one you wanted.
that's an actor.
That was really cool.
Yeah, I mean that's doing multiple takes.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of books and whatnot, we've got a couple of books that are out now, and we've talked about this on past episodes. We're going to keep pushing them because they are worth your reading time. Gwen M. Plano's latest, Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision. This is getting a lot of really good buzz. I've seen this, and there are people who are Gwen Plano fans that have been reading her books for years,
yeah.
And they're saying this one is the best.
This is
and,
the one, yep.
I've got
Go
it on
Gwen.
My Kindle, and I'm going to be getting to it before too long. And so, yeah, go Gwen. And we've also got The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. And Carlisle Toms, this is a novel. He's been on the show before. This is set in the Ozarks, and it's got the religious theme to it and some LGBT stuff going with it, and just a really interesting storyline. And that's out now, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. And
I noticed both of those, the videos are starting to rack up some views too, the book trailers.
Yeah. Yeah. We were going through those last night. Yeah. Those trailers are starting to really catch on. And hey, if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, get over to YouTube, type in Fresh Ink Group and subscribe, hit the like buttons whenever you watch one of the videos. And if you want to be part of tonight's show, you got a question or a comment for tonight's guest, and you want to call in or have us read one of your tweets on the air from Twitter, here's how you can get involved.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right.
So we have a new audiobook out. This is by a scoundrel named Robert G. Willis-Croft. It's Operation Whiteout, A Mac McDowell Mission. This is the fourth book in the Mac McDowell Mission series, which is Cold War Submarine Thrillers, Americans versus Ruskies. And there's some others involved in those stories as well. But Operation Whiteout is just been launched, and it's already coming out of the gate doing well, getting a great reception. And again, this is like we do all of our audiobooks. It's got music bumpers and roll-ins and background side effects. And Beam, who spends most of the time dropping these sound effects in, has really worked hard on this one because it's full of submarine sound effects. And for you submariners out there, they're accurate. I mean, it's the right kind of intercom sound. It's the right kind of everything. So Operation Whiteout, A Mac McDowell Mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft. Go check out the audiobook.
Yeah, and just a little note to that. There was a couple of these effects that were new to this particular book because this is, what, the fourth one we've done?
Yeah.
And there was a couple of sound effects that were new to this, and so I didn't have any left over in my folders from the previous book, so I had to go looking for these. And I found an actual website that's got a bunch of Navy ships and submarine sounds, and it's got all kinds of military stuff. It's got police stuff on it. So I grabbed a few stuff off of that, and you can download it, and it's, you know, it's out there. And so, this is all legit sounds. So it's like you're on the sub. Now, we also have coming soon a book called As We Remember.
Yeah, that's the Fred Washington Senior Woman's Relief Corps number 1 of South Carolina.
Yeah.
See that? I've got it memorized.
I don't have it memorized. And I made notes, and that one I forgot to put the note for. But that's coming soon. And this is a really interesting book. It's loaded with photos, and it's a historical snapshot. And if you're into history, African-American history, American history, this is designed for you. And we've also got American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. Stephen Skibicki is a fantastic poet, and he's also dabbles in short stories. So there's some short stories in this book. It's a collection of poetry, and we've got a website that we're putting together for him as well. And if you're into poetry, and some really good poetry and some dark poetry, think along the lines of Sylvia Plath. Some of her poems were kind of dark, but there was always kind of a message there. This is Skibicki the guy's a fantastic writer, and I'm really impressed with his poetry. And I'm not a huge poetry fan, but I'm impressed with his poetry. So
now,
I give
that
him
as we
approval.
That as we remember, that's part of a whole package. That's a grant from the University of South Carolina, believe it or not. And we're putting together a website for it. We're going to do an audio book that the author is reading. So there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff going around that, which is pretty cool. It's a great organization. We're glad to see them get some props.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll probably be talking about it in our newsletter.
Newsletter.
Subscribe to it. Here's
how do I
subscribe?
Subscribe
to it. It's right here.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
Yeah, so let's take a quick look at what's going on with print sales. What's in our top five list right now? When I pasted this list in on the rundown here 2 days ago, and then I just checked it about 5 minutes ago, they're the same books in the same order. The only difference is the numbers are continuing to go up. That's the direction we like to see them go. So if retired Lieutenant Naval Commander Jerry Pate is out there listening, congratulations, Jerry. Your book, Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat, is in the number one and number two slots in our top five bestsellers this week. And you are pulling away from the other three that are in there. At this point, it's looking like for every 100 soft color cover books sold, there are 30 hardcovers sold. 30 hardcovers for every 100. That's 30%. I mean, that's incredible. And the hardcover is $36.95. This is a big, thick book with 60 chapters in it. So people are paying close to $40 for that hardcover and apparently not blinking. So top two slots. Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by Jerry Pate. In our third slot, and this one jumped back into the list last week after we released this thing, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, and that's Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor. That's the true story about back in the 1920s when Walter P. Chrysler was going to ship hundreds of old Chryslers. Well, they weren't old at the time. They were new Chryslers, ship hundreds of Chryslers to Canada, and they were put on a boat to cross Lake Superior up there in Michigan. An ice storm rolled in and stranded the boat. They wound up having to do a daring rescue to get the crew off, but then that left a boat out there on the shoals with all of these cars on it. So Walter P. Chrysler hired a team, spent a lot of money, and sent them up there to get his cars back. And that's what this story is about. And it's a very cool story, full of historical photos and well-researched and all that. So if you're into maritime history, car history, Michigan history, I mean, whatever, this book's got it for you. That's Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor by historian and retired journalist Larry Jorgensen. In the fourth slot, I don't know if any of you have heard of Gwen M. Plano, but Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision, her latest thriller, which is getting rave reviews, is out there in the number four slot right now. In the fifth slot, we've got Sassy Discovers the AME Church. What's interesting about that is that's the first book in the two-book series. The more recent one is Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret. But the second book is goosing sales of the first book to the point to where a lot of people are saying, oh, wow, this is great. Well, let's start with book one. So book one sales are surging at a time book two is doing very well. So congratulations, everybody, especially Jerry Pate, Larry Jorgensen, Gwen M. Plano, and B.A. Johnson, the author of Sassy Discovers the AME Church and Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret.
All right. Congratulations, everybody. Yeah, we do have another kid book coming out, too, building up that collection. This is Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament by Janice Toney. This is an illustrated chapter book about bullying, and I did the editing on that, and I read the story, and it's a fantastic story for kids that love to read. And it's got some really cool artwork in it. So remember, Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament.
Yeah.
An illustrated chapter book about bullying. And did you miss last week's episode with John Howell? It was a fantastic episode. Several people called in, and people have been listening to it in the archives. I've noticed that the numbers are climbing on that. But if you missed it and you don't know where to find the archives, I'm going to point you to that.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, freshinkgroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
Woohoo!
All right. So, why don't we check out a Patricia A. Guthrie trailer and then meet this week's guest.
All righty.
Elena Dukani inherits her family's castle in Romania, a land dipped in myths, folklore, and the legendary Walking Dead. The local proverb serves as a warning. Do not speak badly of the devil, because you cannot know to whom you will belong. When she's attacked by an international assassin, only her deceased husband and her ex-boyfriend's live presence can protect her on her journey to the mountainous region of Transylvania. But that's not the only problem troubling Elena. Who is that boy invading her dreams? And what really happened to a priceless gem-crusted silver cross buried by an earthquake in the 15th century? Who's stalking Elena? Who wants her dead and why? Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is a paranormal romantic thriller with a deep mystery and plenty of suspense. It'll haunt you in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I read that one, and that's definitely a nail biter.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, this week's guest is Colorado author Cheryl Carpinello. Cheryl is a lover of all mythology, myths, legends, and tales from the ancient and medieval worlds. Myths and legends don't fade away. They are just repackaged for a new audience. As a high school English teacher, she challenged her students to find the connections between today and times long gone by. Some took more digging than others, but the connections are always there. She writes Arthurian legend for young readers and teens. These stories exhibit what she considers to be cornerstones of that legend: courage, friendship, honor, and loyalty. Her tales from Egypt and her new series, Feathers of the Phoenix, meld the ancient medieval worlds with today. The Atlantean Horse, book one of Feathers of the Phoenix, also brings the four horsemen of the apocalypse out of the Bible and into the modern world. Her grandpa's tales, short illustrated tales, help youngest readers build their reading skills. The stories can be used with age 4 up to age 7 or higher for emerging readers. Cheryl Carpinello believes in magic and unicorns. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So how about we know you're in Colorado now. Have you always lived there? And if not, where else have you lived?
I am a Colorado native.
Oh, cool.
All my years have been spent here.
So where in Colorado are you? I'll bet you can see a mountain from your place.
Do you know the Red Rocks Amphitheater?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can see that from my front porch.
Oh. That's on my bucket list to go see a concert there one of these days.
I've only been there once. It was a long time ago.
It's magnificent. I can't hear them, but I can see it.
Wow. Man, that'd be cool if you had like a parabolic microphone or something. You could pick up the sound as well and get free concerts.
Yeah.
So,
I think they guard those things pretty well.
Yeah. So what kind of kid were you growing up in Colorado, Cheryl? Were you into reading and writing at an early age, or is that something that interested you later? Or did you have other hobbies, other interests? What kind of a kid were you?
No, I always read, but probably my biggest interests were horses.
Oh.
And I loved horses. I paid for a horse at 13. And surprisingly enough, I read all horse stories growing up for the most part. I've never written a horse story in my life.
Wow.
That's always been there, but I've just kind of gravitated towards the ancient tales and legends. So did some skiing as I got older. But that's it, fishing, camping.
Well, what was the transition? What made you realize there's more stories out there than just horses?
I think it was college.
Yeah.
My college English classes, yes.
Yeah, college English classes were eye-openers for me, too.
Yeah, that's when we delved into the medieval world and, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey, all that stuff that I had never come into contact with through high school.
Yeah, reading those books where every page has four lines on it and then 30 footnotes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just so you can understand. That's what that meant. That's the thing they used to urinate in, you know, and now it's called a so-and-so or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Now they call it a teacup.
Yeah.
So speaking of college, obviously an English class, you were an English high school English teacher. Where did you go and what all did you study in college?
I majored in English education at the University of Northern Colorado up in Greeley, which is just north of the Denver area.
Yeah, my aunt lives in Greeley.
Yeah.
Cool,
you know,
area.
I did Russian literature, English literature, the ancient literature, you name it, and we read it.
Wow.
It was very, very fascinating to get into.
Okay.
So when we talked the other day, you mentioned something about a grandson who might be interested in writing and maybe a second one that you're working on. Tell us about your family. Obviously a grandmother?
I'm a grandmother. My husband and I have two kids, a boy and a girl, and they each have a boy and a girl. We are both retired high school teachers, my husband and I. He's in math and I'm in English. I tried math and didn't go very far, and so I switched to English. Which much more suited my brain.
It's a wonder you two are compatible.
Well, some days we're not. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
But, and so then I had my oldest grandson is now 14. But when he was 10, his first book was published. He wrote,
cool.
His name is Cameron, and he wrote Cameron's Book of Insects.
All right.
It's just 10 bugs, insects, whatever you want to call them, that he liked. And he went out and took pictures of them all. And then he wrote a little piece on each of them.
That's cool.
That's still floating around out there. And I sell his books for him when I do shows and things. And some days his books sell better than my books.
Wow. I see it on Amazon, Cameron's Book of Insects by Cameron Carpinello. $5.23.
Wow.
Well, that's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, age 10. I see, we're proud of having Ellie Collins publish her first book at 11, but Ellie gave
11,
us a step behind.
Go ahead.
You've got granddaughters as well?
Yes. The granddaughters are the youngest. The boys are the oldest. And
okay.
So the next one in line turns 10 tomorrow. But we don't have Connor's book done yet. We're still working on what we're going to write. So I'm hoping within the next year he'll have something that we can put out. And then we'll go to the girls. They're kind of waiting in the wings. They're kind of anxious to do their books. So
They're like under 6, 7 years old?
One just turned 8, and one will turn 7.
Ah, okay.
So is grandma the influence on the grandchildren writing, or do your children write as well? Okay.
No, my kids do not write. It is all me.
That gene skipped a generation, huh?
It did skip a generation.
Yeah.
Our daughter is a craft person. She loves making all sorts of things. She teaches elementary school. And then our son is a financial advisor.
Oh, good. Cool.
Yeah. So we keep busy with all kinds of things.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, that's just really cool that you've inspired your grandkids to be creative and to put this work out there. I take my hat off to you.
Yeah,
well,
definitely.
Thank you. I was as nervous for Cameron's book as I was for mine when I take him out. So.
Yeah. Okay, and one more reminder, everybody. That's Cameron's Book of Insects by Cameron Carpinello, and you can find it on Amazon. I'd get over there and get a copy if I were you.
Go grab a copy.
Definitely. Yeah. Now, we're going to want to talk about teaching and kids who don't read and stuff like that, but we need to roll another commercial here. And do we have Dr. Helen on the phone, Bean?
We do.
Okay, well, let's roll a commercial. We'll pop in and say hi to her real quick, and then we'll talk about teaching kids who don't like to read.
All right, we'll teach them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Family secrets can be deadly. When Lisa visits her parents one fateful Saturday morning, she hugs her father and takes her suitcase to her childhood bedroom. The doorbell rings, and 1 minute later, her father lies dead on the floor. 3 bullets to the chest. The death of Eric Holmes sends shockwaves throughout the quiet neighborhood. But for the Holmes family, it's devastating. In this fast-paced psychological thriller, Lisa and her brother embark on a quest to solve the mystery of their father's murder. The journey takes them into a secret world where nothing is as it seems. Once the puzzle pieces begin to coalesce, they realize that their father had multiple lives. As the facts unravel, the siblings discover the true meaning of redemption. Gwen M. Plano's Redemption is available worldwide in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats. Published proudly by Fresh Ink Group. Redemption by Gwen M. Plano.
All right. Yeah, get out and grab a copy of that. That's just on the buzz alone. That's something I'm looking forward to
yeah.
reading. All right, let's go to Manhattan and talk to Dr. Helen. Come on.
Okay, hi, how are you?
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Manhattan,
how are you?
You're on the air. How you
did
doing,
you get
Dr.
That
Helen?
Thing, did you get that thing on I think everybody would enjoy that. The man who took off early from work because he was going to his uncle's funeral, remember? I sent you that tweet. Everybody will enjoy this. And
okay.
The next day when he came back to work, his boss said, did you ever hear reincarnation? And the employee said, no. He said, well, your uncle is back. It must be reincarnation. He came to see you.
Okay.
In other words, the guy cheated. He wasn't going to a funeral.
Oh, I see.
I got it.
Yeah.
Did I leave out a part?
No, I get it now.
Just
so
tweet,
he was
tweet it
basically,
again.
He was fudging and taking the day off to go to a funeral
yeah.
that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it
That's
was
funny.
The way that
the guy really showed up at his work.
That was very cute.
So, Helen, what do you think of today's guest, Cheryl Carpinello? She's a retired school teacher who's writing stories about Arthurian legends.
That's wonderful. I think that's wonderful. And you know what I always want to know from every writer? What is their creative process? And I'll keep quiet about mine because we're all different in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheryl?
That's what I'm interested
yes.
in. What is the process that the writer has gone through in their early life when they first started out to be a writer and now that they're accomplished, what's their process? I'm curious. Whatever.
Like how I write? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah. What?
Yeah,
what is
your writing process.
Yeah, do you, like,
you
set
know,
a goal?
You know, what you go through mentally, yeah.
Yeah, if you write
I
in
do
a
lot of it
place.
Mentally. I will do almost all of it in my head before
yeah.
I ever put it down on paper. And
Not
I,
an
I
outliner?
Do that.
In other words, they live in your head, the ideas, right? The characters?
Yes, exactly.
And yeah.
You know, and then I go down and I jot down a brief outline. I don't do a very extended one. I just, you know, points here and there that I want to, where each of the chapters will be, and, you know, just a sentence or two about them, and that's it. But then I always write out my stories longhand before I ever put them in the computer.
I'm like you.
Yeah.
I'm like you. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's... I learned while I was teaching that the kids figure once it's on the computer that it's glued there and they can't do anything with it.
Hmm.
And
yeah,
so I always try to teach them that you
do it. Neurologically about hand-eye connection.
Right.
Even when you're taking notes in college, you know? There's
yes,
something,
exactly.
There's a learning, something grows when you're writing rather than typing it. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to do that
right?
in college.
Do you
I would
find that,
take all my
Gary?
Notes.
I can't write fast enough. I have to type.
Well, we didn't have a computer that you could use when I was in college. So
yeah.
I just had to do longhand, you know. And then before a test, I would go back through and I would type all of, I'd type on the typewriter all my notes.
Wow.
And that was how I learned all the stuff.
That's a good bit of work.
Like the, don't you like the idea that the, that she experiences the same thing I do? It lives, the story lives in your brain before
yeah.
you
yes.
even put it down.
All the time. Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But you know what I am interested in is this new AI that will write your stories for you.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I don't think I would ever use one. I know I would never use one, but I'm curious as to what that would look like.
Well,
without
I'm just,
any human input.
I'm just imagining the day is going to come when somebody's going to win the Pulitzer Prize for literature, and then we're going to find out, oh, but I didn't really write it. AI did.
Oh, God,
second,
I hope
you mean
just...
a robot is going to take the prize, the Nobel Prize in literature?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny?
not likely, though.
No, I hope not.
But it's just I can imagine something like that. I can write that story then. I'll write the story about AI writing the story.
There you go.
Now that's good. That's a good one.
All right.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for calling in, Helen.
Thank you.
All right, and listeners,
okay,
we're taking
bye.
Phone calls.
I'm listening. I'll keep listening.
Okay.
Anybody out there want to call in and with a question or comment for Cheryl Carpinello or just to, you know, hurl some accusations at either of the hosts, that would be 516-453-9902. Give us a call.
Now, we do have some comments here on Twitter that we can go to.
Cool.
We have Robert Williscroft. He says, welcome, Cheryl, fellow Colorado Authors League member. I look forward to listening to what you have to say.
All right.
Do you want to take the next one?
Yeah, we got Verwayne Greenhoe. He says, check out one of my newest Bella projects, How I Keep Smiling in a World That Isn't. Finding happiness is easy if you know what you are looking to find. I explain how I found peace and joy in a chaotic world by explaining real events. He's got a link to it here. Now, those of you familiar with Verwayne, he was a guest on our show last week?
Two weeks ago.
And he talked a lot about Bella. And he's making good money off of Vella, like, you know, $700, $800 a month from each story. So you might want to check that out and learn more about Vella as well. But thanks for the tweet, Verwayne.
Yeah, and he's also threw in there, speaking of AI, he says, I've worked extensively with AI and the stories it generates are generally written at a fourth grade level and about the same grammar level.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm going to start writing kids' books using AI.
Yeah, and it seems like they would have to be detached from reality or details or verisimilitude or something. I mean, how do you know what a submarine commander is going to do when he spots the Russian sub?
Yeah,
you know, you got to make that up. There wouldn't be any authenticity to it at all. But at any rate, thanks for the tweets for Wayne and everybody else out there. If you want us to read your comment or question on the air, hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Send it to us on Twitter and put that hashtag in there. We'll talk to you.
But hey, if you can tweet it, pick up the phone and give us a call and just speak it.
Yeah.
We're taking
calls. Now, our guest this week is Cheryl Carpinello. She writes primarily young adult fantasy, Arthurian legend types of stories. And Cheryl's a retired school teacher who tells us writes for reluctant readers, kids who don't read. What's that about, Cheryl?
Well, it's just what it says, kids who don't read or don't like to read.
There's a bunch of them.
There are a bunch of them, and I don't know a high school teacher that doesn't know, you know, a handful or more of these kids. They've just never found anything that has held their interest. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I dealt with these kids for the 20-plus years I was in the classroom, and it was amazing, which is why I write what I write. It's amazing what they actually latched onto. And one of the big things was Arthurian legend. I would do an Arthurian legend unit in 11th grade. And these are kids, you know, who have their driver's license, you know, they're working, they're doing all things. But they just absolutely loved Arthurian legend. They would go to the library on their own and look for things, books or magazines, articles, anything that they could find that dealt with that. I had kids make up poems, songs about different stories, different characters in the Arthurian legend. And that was my biggest influence with those kids on that topic. And then the other one that they really gravitated towards were the ancient tales out of ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, ancient Rome. They just loved those. I mean, if you've ever looked at the Iliad and the Odyssey, the books, those are hard books to read.
Hard.
Yes.
And long,
yes.
Very long. You
know. And I had
like a whole semester long.
Yes, they were. You know, and I had a little simpler versions for the kids, but they just got into those, and they were just amazed. The ancient Greek plays, they found so much relevance in today's world to them that they were just, I think they were just didn't know what to believe. You know, they just really, really liked it. So that's why I write those tales and legends from the ancient medieval worlds, because I want to reach those kids at an earlier age. So my books actually start, my Arthurian legend actually starts at third grade up through, you know, 13 or 14, and then my ancient world starts at about 12 or 13 and then goes on up through high school if they get hooked. And, you know, I've had some really good conversations with kids and parents about the draw that those books have to them. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's just amazing. I have kids, you know. Now, I don't know how many of them read once they got out of high school and away from my influence, but they sure did read those years that I had them. And I had kids at 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. I had the same kids usually all the time.
Wow. That is so cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, people in our generation, I mean, we know what you're referring to when you say a siren song or, you know, all those kinds of things that come out of like the Iliad and the Odyssey and a lot of those other older works as well. But, man, these kids don't know any of this. They haven't been exposed to any of the stories, the tales. They haven't seen Disney versions of them because Disney hasn't been doing that quite so much like they used to in the old days. And all new to them. And how exciting, you know? Just how exciting.
Well, it is. And, you know, I don't think there's a year that goes by that something doesn't come out with Arthurian legend in it.
Yes, yes. It's
you
a
know,
stalwart.
Last year it was Scooby-Doo
that
went to King Arthur's castle. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just, and a lot of the kids I'll talk to, I will say, do you ever watch, who are the Minions? Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, well,
yeah.
You know, do you remember when Bob went to London and he pulled the sword out of the stone? And they'll say, yes. I said, that's King Arthur. Oh, it is. You know, it puts a light on.
Yeah.
In them.
Yeah. Connected to stuff they know. That's really cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, our next topic on the list here is about your workshops teaching medieval poetry and story writing to kindergarten through eighth graders. You just gave a good example of it. You showed how you can connect these stories to what they're familiar with today. And I'll bet you do a lot of that kind of stuff in these workshops.
I do that, but I kind of let them feel their own way around.
Hmm.
So did you want to, what it's like to live in the medieval world. I do whole day workshops just on that topic. And the kids have different areas that they go to. They learn what life was like in the castle, what a castle was like. They learn to do some poetry. They learn to stuff a dragon. You know, just all kinds of fun things. And, you know, when I do them for the Colorado Girl Scouts, those girls come dressed as princesses and dames, and they just, I hardly ever have any of those girls that come dressed as a regular person. They're always one of those characters. And they just, you know, they just, it's amazing. I was amazed. I'm still amazed. And the poetry, the illuminated poetry is when you have the poetry, but then you have the pictures that explain the poetry all around the poem. And when I do those, the boys in the classes are usually the most involved in what they're doing.
Oh, wonderful.
Because
just,
you know, they'll look at something, you know, a sword or a horse or a knight or something, and then they'll do a poem. I give them samples, you know, and then they'll write, you know, using my sample as a guide, and then they'll illustrate them. And they really are. They're very amazing to watch these kids do this kind of stuff. And when you know that they wouldn't do this on their own anyplace else. So,
yeah, they wouldn't. They wouldn't be exposed anywhere else either.
Yeah, and
right.
That goes right back to the inspiration. You're inspiring another generation every time you do this. And just, you know, getting them to feed their own imaginations, which is really cool.
Yes, it really is, because I think a lot of times video games take that imagination away from them.
Yeah.
They're looking at it all.
Yeah.
And so that allows them to use that brain and imagine what things would be like with them as the creator.
I've got an 8-year-old grand who's into the series Wings of Fire, and that surprises me that you know, a fantasy series like that is appealing to such a young age, and he says his friends are all into it as well. Of course, he's kind of a weird kid. I had to take him to see Hamilton because that's his favorite play, and now I have to get tickets to see Queen with Adam Lambert in Atlanta because that's his favorite band. So he's kind of an odd 8-year-old.
That'll be good, though.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah,
but
Queen.
Yeah, but he says that, you know, all the third graders are into these Wings of Fire books, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, all that stuff comes out of Arthurian legend.
All of it. Every bit of it.
Every bit of it. Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, all that stuff had their beginnings back there in that Arthurian legend.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes wonder if Arthurian legend never developed, what types of materials would be out there today.
Yeah, I've thought about that too. That and Shakespeare.
I mean, think about
Shakespeare plots and how they've been turned into kids' stories and Disney.
And,
I mean, everything.
And movies,
you know.
And you know, right. Dark movies and all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, even children's
cartoons,
fairy tales have been turned into reinterpreted into modern day movies. And if you're watching them, you can see, like, there's a movie Reese Witherspoon did back in the 90s. That was one of her early movies. And it was called Freeway. And she's a kid that's got to get to grandma's house. And it was a modern-day retelling of Little Red White Riding Hood. And the big bad wolf was Kiefer Sutherland, who was a serial killer. So she had to get past the serial killer to get to grandma's house.
Yeah.
And as you're watching it, you're like, this is Little Red Riding Hood. And that's what it was.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with those things.
Yeah. So, Beam, you want to roll the calling dream? And then we've got more questions for Cheryl Carpinello, author out of Colorado, maven of the young adult fantasy world.
You are listening to the Voice of Indy podcast.
In 1945, 10-year-old Ronald Dennison, the son of a backwoods Arkansas preacher, began having profound dreams about religion and a strange red-haired woman. The dreams follow him for decades, with the woman sometimes seducing him, other times calling him to become a televangelist, but eventually berating him for his sins of lust. She holds a secret so dark that he dares never admit it, even to himself. The more famous and wealthier he becomes, the more he struggles with his adultery, his fetish, and his shame, until his torment can no longer be contained. Staggering revelations challenge everything he ever believed. Will truth bring him the peace he always craved? Or will the woman's demands prove more than he can bear? Read the novel, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms.
Pick it up wherever
you
buy your books. Yeah.
Now, that commercial, like all of the commercials you hear on the show, are book trailers with video, animation, and all that kind of stuff. Go to the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube and check them out. We picked up another subscriber yesterday, and I had to get up and do my happy dance.
Yeah. Now, Cheryl, when you're not busy motivating your grandchildren to write books and these kids at these medieval and poetry workshops and whatnot, what do you like to do to you know, kind of wind down? Do you have any hobbies, interests, and how do you spend your free time?
Well, I still read, and I read probably 3 or 4 books at a time. comes from my college days when you had to read a book for each class you took and all at the same time. So I do that. You know, my husband and I love to travel. He's not only a retired high school teacher, but he's also a retired high school and college football coach. So while I was teaching, I also worked nights out at our airport for one of our major airlines and retired from there. So we have what we call the unlimited lifetime benefits for flying, which
nice.
I just is. Oh, it's lovely. I love it. We couldn't go any place without it, I'll tell you. So every fall he picks what team is his favorite that he wants to go and watch a home game. And so we always do that. We've been to Notre Dame. We've been to the University of Florida. This last fall we went to Ohio State. We've been all over the country going to those. And they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we usually take 3 days and get there a couple days before the game and then come home on the Sunday or Monday after that.
College towns are great to visit even besides the game, you know, on game
day.
Yeah. Go hang out and all the stuff that's happening.
They are. And, you know, I'm not an NFL fan, but I sure like the college games.
Yeah, college is where it's at. Now, I got
three words
for you and your husband, Cheryl. The big house.
Mm-hmm. We were close. We were close.
Okay.
That is on his list.
Yeah. I heard the words Ohio State come out of your mouth, and it must have been you know, some kind of a glitch in the microphone here or something. But
no, sorry. We've been to Michigan State.
Yes!
We just haven't made it to the big house yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. They got a cute little stadium up there in Atlanta, East Lansing.
Cute little stadium.
Yeah. No, the big house is still the biggest one. So you got to go to the biggest one at some point. There's nothing like a game at the big house.
For
those of you who don't know, that's University of Michigan.
Yeah, we just haven't found a time frame that we can go and visit and tickets. So
all right, well let me know.
Yeah,
I'll meet you there.
Okay, sounds good. And then you know I love to travel internationally, and I drag him along wherever we go. And that's part of those flight benefits that I have. We went to Egypt for 3 weeks in 2008 and just went on our own and rode the train from one end of this country to the other end and back again and, you know, visited and stayed in hostels and things and just had a grand old time visiting all the sites and things. And we spent 3 weeks driving around the UK, which is not easy to do when they drive on the wrong side of the road. That took some getting used to, but after 3 weeks, I kind of had it all down. And then we've been to Iceland twice. The last time we went 2 years ago and drove around the entire island. That is setting for the second book in my Feathers of the Phoenix that I'm working on now. And so I really wanted to go and see the country. So we spent 2.5 weeks and did that. You know, we go down to Mexico a lot. We go down to the Caribbean. All things that we love to do but are able to do because of the flights that we don't have to pay for. So that's very nice.
Very nice. My cousins worked for an airline, and my aunt spent the rest of her life flying hither and yon and loving every minute of it.
Oh, yeah, yes. And our favorite place in the States to go is Las Vegas. We just love to go there for 3 or 4 days and just chill out and, you know, just hang out at the pool and enjoy the sunshine. So.
Yeah. Have you seen David Copperfield's Vegas show?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's a cool one. It's a cool one.
I recommend it
next time you go. Yeah, I've only seen him 3 times throughout my life, and all 3 times it blew me away.
We've seen a lot of rock bands and things in Vegas, but not David Copperfield.
Mm.
So I'll put that on my list.
All right, you mentioned one of your series. We've got a bunch of books from you here. They're mostly clumped into series. Let's talk about them. What would you like to talk about first?
We could do my Arthurian legend, my Guinevere.
Okay. And those start out, it's called the Guinevere Trilogy?
Yes.
Okay. And the three titles?
Where there was only going to be one originally.
Yeah, that happens with trilogies a lot. Except we're publishing The Chair 3 right now, and it's going to be out of 5. So one book turned into five. It happens.
Guinevere was just those, and I only wrote that for one reason, because every year for 20 years when I talked to my kids about Arthurian legend and what they knew about it, they could tell me all kinds of things about Arthur, the Round Table, all that kind of stuff. But every time I asked them about Guinevere, all I got were the same three answers. Every year, I kid you not. She married Arthur, she cheated on him, and she was the downfall of Camelot. And I would come away each year thinking, oh, my God, that is awful. They've got to
more.
Be, I know there's more to this character. And so that was why I wrote the first book, with introducing to this young girl, 12 turning 13, who is all of a sudden told that she's going to marry an older man and become a queen.
Wow.
You know, how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, do you, so that was going to be the only one. But her and Sedwin, her best friend in that book, so enjoyed the stories that they just never shut up, and they were in my head all the time. Gerald, you promised I could be a knight. When are you going to let me be a knight? And Guinevere says, what am I going to do? How are you going to help me? And finally, I think after about 4 years, I said, okay, I will write one more book, and that was entitled At the Dawn of Legend. And by the time I got done with that, they were in such dire straits that I had to write book three. And so I finished them off with book three. And I have had readers say, are you going to do book four? Are you going to have Guinevere get married? We're waiting for that one. And it's like, no, I don't think so. So I don't know. Right now it's a trilogy and will remain so for at least the present time.
And that's a Mom's Choice Award winner, huh?
Yes. Yes, that was. I was real pleased with that.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, and the Moonbeam Award for, one of the best chapter books. So it's, and you know, out of all the books that I've written, I've got 12 or 13 there, I sell that the most.
Oh,
and I
good.
Sell book one more than I sell the trilogy.
Hmm.
Book one outsells everything. It's amazing. And I just have one other in the Arthurian legend, which is the Young Knights of the Round Table, the King's Ransom, which is an adventure thriller. Three friends, when their older friends accused of murder and theft, they take the knight's vow to prove his innocence or to die trying. Pretty hefty there, but they don't hesitate. I think when you read my bio, one of the cornerstones of the Arthurian legend is friendship. And another one is loyalty. And so they show that in the Young Knights. Those are my best. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I started to say that the Tales and Legends, that includes the King's Ransom.
Yes.
And what else
Sons
is in that?
Thing?
Tales and Legends Writing Journal.
Sons
what is that?
I have a writing journal. And all my other books are Tales and Legends. I have a branding that I use, which I was so pleased when I was able to grab that, Tales and Legends for Reluctant Readers.
Hmm.
All my stories are fast-paced. They are shorter than normal books that kids would read at that age. I shouldn't have said normal, but of typical books. Reluctant readers don't like long books.
No, they don't.
You know, and I'd watch these kids in the library, and they'd go through, and they'd count how many pages they don't have to read. You laugh, but it's true. And so all of my four Arthurian books all have some kind of simple drawing illustration at the beginning of each chapter that the kids don't have to read.
Wow.
You know, it also kind of gives them a little idea of what the chapter's going to be about also.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these three, the Tales and Legends seem to be your most popular. What kind of feedback are you getting like for the reviews on these? I'm looking and seeing there seems to be quite a bit of the reviews there.
There are, you know, a lot of my readers don't write reviews because they're young readers. But I do have some parents and grandparents who will read with them and write the reviews. I've had real good reviews on those, real positive reviews. I had one little girl that came up to me last summer. I also work on the farmer's market here in town. And she came up and gave me a hug, and she said, I'm so proud to meet you. She said, my grandma bought me your books 3 years ago, And I am reading them through for the sixth time.
Wow.
And it's like, oh, honey.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, one of our questions that we usually get to is, have you had any extraordinary interactions with fans, something that made you feel good feedback or something? You just gave us an excellent one. I mean,
yeah.
you don't get any better than that. You touched that girl's life, and she's still a fan, and after these years, she's still reading them. That's as good as you can feel.
Yeah, reading a book six times. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I
definitely.
Know. And that's all three Guinevere's.
Yeah, I'm still picturing the kids counting the pages because it reminds me of reading the Iliad and the Odyssey. You know, I'm reading the Iliad and the Odyssey, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm down to the last 800 pages. And then, you know, the next time I'd look, it'd be like, wait, 850 pages left. What happened?
Yeah. You know, well, and then another one of my newest book, the Atlantean Horse, book one of the Feathers of the Phoenix, I had we have a little Christmas market that I work at with my books and that. And this last year, a mother bought that book for her son, who was 14. And she said, you know, I don't know what to get him because she said he doesn't read. And I always have to point out to them, I said, do you see what my branding is? Tales and Legends for Reluctant Readers.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, and she read it, and her daughter read it, and she said, you know, he might like this. Well, so she got that for him, and I heard 2 weeks later from her. She sent me an email, and she said, I cannot believe it. She said, he sat there and took that book, and she said he flipped through a few pages and kind of looked a little bit, you know. And she said, the next time I looked over, she said he was reading.
Wow.
I said, fantastic.
Did she take a picture?
She
is
did.
There proof? Is there proof?
Yes, there was proof. She did send me a picture.
Wow.
You know, and I've had pictures from girls at ball games, their parents or grandparents, whoever, sitting there reading Guinevere on the Eve of Legend at the ball game instead of watching the ball game.
Looking at their phones. Which is the other thing they do. If they're bored,
yes.
They've got their phones out.
Yeah.
Wow, that is very cool.
So, you know, that is, and that's you know, it's maybe only one person, but it's one more person that now might have a road down to where they want to read more.
And you said that one was Feathers of the Phoenix, the Atlantean Horseman?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah, the Atlantean Horse.
Now, Sons of the Sphinx, Ancient Tales and Legends, that's also in the same Feathers of the Phoenix series?
Well, it became the prequel once I got the Atlantean Horse done.
Okay.
Because I used the same character. I used Rosa from Sons of the Sphinx. I used her and her cousin, Jerome, in Feathers of the Phoenix, in the Atlantean Horse. And they'll go through the whole series. So I really liked Rosa when I got done with Sons of the Sphinx. She really turned out to be a pretty marvelous character. And so I thought, well, you know, she has this very special gift that very, very few people in the world have. And, boy, wouldn't it be neat if she could use this to help raise the island of Atlantis.
Ooh.
And she agreed, and her cousin Jerome said, I'm in too. I said, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's cool. We've also got Book Elves Anthology, Volume 2 here. Is there a Volume 1 that I'm not seeing?
No, because I only contributed one story to that one. It's
okay.
A group of authors from around the U.S. and the U.K. and France. And we got together. They got together and did book one. And then I got in on book two and contributed a story to that one. And so, that was the only short story that I contributed to that.
Okay. Now, you've got Grandma's Tales. That's Grandma and Grandpa's Tales series?
Uh-huh.
Okay,
yes.
But I'm not seeing Grandpa's Tales here on Amazon.
Oh, you should. They're both there.
Okay.
They're the same stories, different pictures on the cover.
Oh, okay.
Okay. There's
cool.
Three in that set, yeah. Yeah, I just did Grandma's Tales, book one, the first time, because I'm a grandma, you know.
Yeah.
And at one of the shows I was at, I had a gentleman come up to me very seriously and said, you know what? He said, I'm not a grandma. I'm a grandpa. I said, you know what? Give me 2 weeks and I'll have a grandpa on that cover for you.
There you go.
And so I did.
Works.
And so I have 3 books in the series, and you can get them with either a grandma or a grandpa on the cover. It's the same stories in book 1 and book 2 and book 3. It's just who you want on the cover.
Huh, okay. That's cool. I'm only seeing grandmas on Amazon. So you might want to contact them and get them to link them to your name, because I did this by clicking on your name to see all of your books.
Now, this Guardian of a Princess and Other Shorts, is this a short story collection?
You know, that is, and it basically is kind of, I don't have any more copies of that Amazon made, but I don't. I did that before I decided to write more of Guinevere, and I did that to help when the King's Ransom came out. I had some backstory at the beginning of that book of the King's Ransom that the editor at the time said, no, we're not going to do this. We need to start here. And I thought, but I really want this in there, but she wouldn't let me do that with the publishing company. I said, well, okay. So when I took back my book rights, I went ahead and put that stuff in the book itself, but in the meantime, I put it in this little short thing, the Guardian of the Princess and Other Shorts, and I would hand that out for free at the shows that I was at, so that people could kind of showcase and see what I wrote. So
that's neat.
Okay, and then all of these are through Silver Quill Publishing.
Yes, yes.
You've been working with them all along.
An author consortium out of England, and there are 13 of us, I believe. I'm the only U.S. author in it. The others are from England. We have one from France who sometimes lives in Abu Dhabi and sometimes lives in England. And then we have a princess from Saudi Arabia who publishes also. And so all of us publish under Silver Quill Publishing.
Ah, okay.
We pool our money to buy our ISBNs, you know, and then we help promote each other.
Okay, well, what about all the elements that go into it? Like, is there a cover designer in the group, or how do you work?
Editors?
No, we all work independently. We are just using the umbrella to cover the publishing of all of our books.
Okay, I like that. Okay, then how about you?
Who does your cover? Yeah, who does your cover?
I have a gentleman, Chris Berg, B-E-R-G-E, out of South Carolina. Friend of mine found him for me about, 14, probably close to 10 years ago. Because my first covers for my first book, Guinevere on the Eve of Legend, were atrocious. I didn't do a very good job. And he took that over, and, well, you can see my covers. He does all of them except for the Grandma and Grandpa's. And he just does an absolutely fabulous job.
He does. These are very nice covers.
Yeah. It's Berg Design, B-E-R-G-E Design. You can find him on the online there.
Okay, great. Well,
let me just throw one more question. Editors, you're obviously an English, former English teacher. Do you edit your own books, or do you bring someone in?
Oh, I edit to a degree, but once I'm done writing the book, I've gone through it as I've written. I go back and reread what I wrote the last time and edit as I go along. So by the time I get to the end of the book, I don't go back again. I have 2 editors. I have a line editor and I have a copy editor, and I use them religiously. I learned when I was teaching that you can edit your stuff all you want to on your own, but your brain knows what's going to be there, and so it tells you what's there, even if it's not there.
Hmm.
Yeah. You need those extra set of eyes.
You really do. You really do.
So you want to shout out some names of these people?
Well, I won't do my line editor, my line editor, because she's just a personal friend that I worked with at the schools. But Nancy Bell out of Canada does all my copy editing.
That name sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar. I just was thinking that.
Yeah.
I think we've had somebody else on here that
somebody else
promoted
gave her credit.
Yeah.
Could be, you know, and she's an author also. She writes out of, she writes horse stories, and I think she's got a series on marriages in the Old West or something like that. I can't think of it exactly.
Huh, kind of a, maybe a Janet Oakey kind of series or something.
We may have to reach out to her and have her on the show sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we should. But, yeah, you know, and then I have two writing friends. That sounds horrible. I have two author friends, or two friends who are also authors. We all write the same types of books. One is Wendy Layton Porter, and she is also Silver Quill. She's the one who sometimes is in France living. Right now she is in Abu Dhabi and is getting ready to go to the UK tomorrow to spend a few weeks and then go back to I don't know which country. But she writes Shadows from the Past, or Shadows of the Past. I never can get that right. She'll be upset at me. Stories going through the ancient world right up through the modern world about two kids and their friend and a cat who are searching for the kids' parents who went through a hole and have been lost and are traveling through time, and the kids are go through each era to try to find them. And so they go through, like, starting in ancient Egypt. They go through, the ancient Greek world, and they do that. And then my other friend, Fiona Ingram, she writes stories, Chronicles of the Stone, which are also set back in those early years. And kind of met online and kind of got together. And so we kind of read each other's stuff once in a while and, you know, have ideas and help each other out. And we Skype, try to Skype every other month or so that we can all talk together. So.
Skype's a good thing.
Yeah,
it brings
well, that's
the world
great.
Together. Yeah, when it's free.
Yeah,
now.
And it works out nice.
I think we're going to have to make the audiobook for that because we've already got a whole collection of cat meows and cat purrs and cat mews and all that kind of stuff from doing Robert G. Willis Cross Ort Chronicles series where Max the Tabby Cat is in every tale. In fact,
who
there's
a
digital version of Max also. So there's two cats in there.
Yeah, well, Wendy's cat is Max also.
Oh, okay. Well,
hey,
we've already got Max
the crossover.
Cat. Yeah. Cheryl, it's been great having you on, learning about these wonderful things you're doing with young people and reluctant readers. We've definitely got to give kudos to you for that because that's a great goal, great thing to accomplish out there. You get a 14-year-old to sit down and read a book, you've probably opened a door to the next book, to the next book, to the next book. You've changed that kid's life.
That's what I hope. That's
yeah.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I remember kindergarten when I first started learning how to read, and by first grade, when I could read whole sentences, I remember going to the library because of my teacher. She would take us down once a week, and I remember looking at those books and thinking, I can read anyone in here. And I chose my books, and I've been a reader, a voracious reader ever since because of the two teachers, the kindergarten and first grade teachers. They both encouraged it.
That's how you became an expert in astrophysics by second grade.
Yeah, and then I started doing, you know, nuclear physics and all this good stuff. And that was fifth
all right.
Grade.
So Cheryl, do you have any advice for other authors out there?
Well, I do. Can I one book that nobody's mentioned yet?
Yeah.
Mine?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. My Poor Little Toucan Common Speaks.
Yeah.
It's just a small little book, but it speaks from the grave.
Oh.
And tells you what his life was like growing up, his time as Pharaoh. He talks to you about his marriage, and he does the one thing that nobody else in the whole entire world can do. He tells you how he died.
Oh, well, that's cool.
So it's just a short little book, but it's, you know, it's what, when I was trying to write Sons of the Sphinx, because that is a time travel back to 1330 BC, Egypt, with the ghost of King Tut. He kept telling me, you know, I'm not going to let you write this book until you write my story. And I kept saying, but I really want to write this book. He said, well, then you know what you got to do? You got to tell me my story. So I did.
Now, he was like 14, wasn't he?
Well, he was, yeah, when he became
he
king.
He wasn't very old.
Was 18, I think 18 or 20 when he died.
They think yeah, right but, in there, yes.
But a 14-year-old king, that's a story that can appeal to a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah, and when I was growing up in the 70s, the whole Tutankhamun's treasures came through and toured the United States. So King Tut was popular. He was everywhere. Steve Martin had the song and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember in seventh grade, we had a whole semester of Egyptology where we just did nothing but study ancient Egypt, the Valley of the Kings and all that stuff and the various dynasties.
Yes.
And that's one of my bucket lists as well. Red Rocks and ancient Egypt. Always wanted to go there. So I have a question.
Yeah.
The two, the sons of the Sphinx and Tutankhamun, did you write these before you went to Egypt or afterwards? And how
After.
Did the trip to Egypt and the books, how did they inspire each other, if they did?
I wrote them after we went.
Okay.
I've always wanted to go to Egypt, and so we went. That was our retirement trip. We both retired the same year from teaching, and that was our retirement trip. And so we went, and just absolutely magnificent. I would go again in a heartbeat. If you go and you have room in your suitcase, let me know, and I will be there. you know, it's one of those places where you go, and you know you're only going to go one time, and then you come home, and it's like, oh, but I didn't see this. Oh, so, but, yeah. And so I wanted to go back there, so that's what I did with Sons of the Sphinx. I did some more reading when I got home on it, and that story idea just came to mind, to go back there in the days of King Tut.
All right. How can people find you online? How can they contact you? Social media, blog, website, Facebook, Instagram,
yes.
Twitter?
Yes. Yeah, my website is www.CherylCarpinello.com, and I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I just got on, and they're probably going to ban it. I just got on TikTok.
It's not on
I
your government device, I hope.
Yeah. I thought I would try that, so I've just got a couple of videos of my, you know, book trailers up there, but so I haven't done much. But you know, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Pinterest, but I don't get there very often to update things. I find updating everything is a major chore. Yes.
Yeah.
So that, but you know, as far as advice to other writers, well, if you like to write, just write. You don't have to write for a big audience. You can write for. I have a lot of people. You know, I say, you know, this is great, but. Who is it for? And a lot of them, they just want to write for their family. Then just do it, you know. And write your stories to leave to the younger generation, because you can print them for nothing on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can upload them and get them a paperback book, you know, for pennies. And so just if you have stories you want to tell, just do it.
Good advice. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl Carpinello is our guest this week. Colorado author, focuses mainly on young adult fantasy, Arthurian legend kinds of tales, and she's got some other cool stuff too, so check it out. Cheryl Carpinello, CARPINELLO. You can find her books out there everywhere. Cheryl, it's been great having you on.
Thank you, guys. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so next week we've got Jody Bowersox, who is another maven from the Colorado Authors League. In fact, she's a muckety-muck in the organization there. So we're going to have back-to-back Colorado authors. This is cool.
Yeah.
And then we head to Texas for the next two, don't we?
Yeah. The next one following Jody Bowersox is the return visit of Patty Wiseman. We had her on early in this show when we got started two and a half years ago. And so she's going to make a return visit and catch us up on what she's been doing since she was here last time. And after that,
we've got Martin Herman, who I believe is a Canadian author. Is that right, or was he Texas?
Same
difference.
Can't
Canada,
remember.
Texas.
It's Canada,
who can tell
Texas.
Them apart? Yeah.
Same kind of people.
But Martin Herman is not an author that we are familiar with. We didn't publish him. We haven't worked on his stuff, but his publicist
reach out to us, checked out our podcast, and lobbied us strongly to see if he could get him on. So what the heck? We're going to meet Martin Herman and learn more about him and his books 4 weeks from now. So, again, thanks for being on the show, Cheryl. We look forward to having you back next time you have a new book out, and keep us updated on your stuff so that we can put it in our newsletter, because you got some fans out there now. We want to keep them informed.
Thank you very much, guys. I will.
All right.
Thanks, Cheryl.
We'll see everybody next time. Now, Beam, you've got a couple of commercials if you want to run one or two on the way out.
I'm going to do that.
We'll see everybody next week. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Hi, I'm Mary Margaret Fanson. My grandmother, Big Mama, calls me Sassy. I've been a member of the African Methodist Episcopal Church all my life. I never knew why everyone was so proud to be AME. Then I met Gerald in Children's Church. He thinks he knows everything about being AME. I have to learn a lot more just to show him. B.A. Johnson has been writing a series of books about me, my brother, and my friends, with lots of colorful drawings. We also explore bullying, friendship, inclusion, death, grief, forgiveness, and more. Sassy discovers the AME Church is about me learning about our church and something terrible that happened in Charleston. The second book, Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret, is about discovering the story of our church's founder's family and one hero in particular. These and more Sassy books are published by Fresh Ink Group in laminated hardcover, soft cover, and all ebook formats available worldwide. Come on, join me and discover why I can say I'm proud to be AME.
Now, from science fiction master Robert G. Willescroft, the Oort Federation, to the stars, the second Oort Chronicle. As the Oort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While Thorpe's group terraforms Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Oort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Oort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks by Fresh Ink Group.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.